This is Portia.
And welcome to another episode of She Speaks Stories. And today is going to be such a good day. Portia, it's been a while since it's been just you and me. And
I know. I like that.
Super fun.
It's fun. I love our team, and I love when I get to be with different members of our team. I feel like I've done the full circle. Katie and I are often together. Gwen and I recently did an episode together. Sometimes Gwen.
That's right. Yes.
That was so fun. But I don't think it's been just the two of us for a hot minute.
I know. It's very true. How is Minneapolis, my friend?
You know, summer has returned to what it's supposed to be in Minneapolis, which I love. There was a minute where they forgot and maybe they thought they were Arizona or Texas and it was hot. Like, get your life right if you don't like this heat hot.
That's right.
But we've cooled off and it's still summer. We still can swim, but man alive, there was a minute where I was like, Lord, do you remember when you moved me from Texas? Because I think maybe you forgot.
That's right.
Really hot right now.
I'm envious of your lower temps right now. I really am. It's scorching July here. It's so hot.
I feel like the whole country has been hot this summer, and there are all sorts of scientific reasons for that, but we're not scientists, so we don't have to do that.
That's right. That's good. Well, we have got a great, great guest today. Do you want to dive in and introduce her?
I would. Kira Fontana is in the house.
I love that name.
Oh, thanks.
It's so fun. I love that.
I mean, and then just to be clear, not in the actual house, because we all live in a virtual world. She's in the Zoom house with us. And so, Kira, we're so excited to have you here and to introduce you to our listeners. And so welcome to She Speaks Story.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Is it a good day where you are?
It's amazing. I'm actually in San Diego right now, so I can't complain about the weather. It's pretty nice.
Perfect.
You know, that is one of the places that my husband is dying to visit. He always talks about how San Diego is perfection year-round.
It is.
Kind of is.
I know.
Like San Diego might be the filter temperature-wise for heaven. Like where you're not too hot.
That is exactly it.
You're not too cold. You're just right. So like when is it? Like, well, it doesn't get super hot there, correct?
It doesn't. I mean, you know, 80s will be really hot here,
you know,
and people complain when it's 80, but then people complain when it's 60, because it's like, oh, I can't wear flip-flops, you know? So it's definitely not much of a variation throughout the year, but I've lived on the coast, so, you know, I've lived in very cold temperatures, and then funny enough, I'm moving to Austin, Texas, so it's gonna get hot.
But you know what? Austin is far enough north in Texas that if a huge cold front rolls through, like it did this last winter, you'll get some snow. So,
my family had all the freezes this year with the broken water pipes to prove it. So, yeah, it was crazy.
It was crazy town. Well, we're going to fully introduce you to our guests, and I'm going to read your bio, okay?
Awesome.
So for Kira Fontana, creating music has always been spiritual. After studying music composition on the East Coast, Kira moved to Los Angeles to further her music career and ended up one of the top vocal coaches in the city. Discouraged with what she saw in the music industry and finding no real place for her music, she eventually stopped writing and singing. But the end of 2017, something changed. Kira had been, air quotes, spiritual, but not religious for many years, but several members of her immediate family became born-again Christians. Join us as we listen into her story and celebrate her path to freedom. Whoa.
Yes.
I am excited to dive in. And so we're going to start in the early days. So growing up in the San Francisco Bay Area, what were some of your favorite things to do?
I think for me, it was always music. So I had a family of pianists. So it was my mom played, but also some of her cousins who lived also in the Bay Area. They were borderline professional. They were like really serious amateurs. So I grew up hearing a lot of classical piano. Mm. And so I was just captivated from a really young age. And I remember I was collecting music boxes. That was like my favorite thing, was getting a new music box. And wow. I would have them on these shelves up in my room. And my room was just covered with music boxes. And every night before I went to bed, I would turn them all on at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And then they would kind of slowly you know, first it would be this like beautiful cacophony like of sound, but then they would just like slowly go off one by one until at the end, the longest playing one was always my favorite things from The Sound of Music. It was this, but it was just so beautiful. And so now I look back and I go, oh, I was composing. Kind of like I was just experimenting, you know, even as a kid, just so fascinated by it. And so I remember my mom got a call from my kindergarten teacher when I was five. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, all the other kids are going outside and playing during recess and lunch, but your daughter's staying inside and playing the piano. And so maybe you should get her lessons. So I remember my mom kind of surprised me for my sixth birthday and took me my first piano lesson and rented a piano. So that was the beginning of it. And then she said, you can't quit until you're 14. So wow. She was going to invest in it, but she was going to make sure that I, you know, because kids, we can just go back and forth and try different things. But she really wanted me to have a strong foundation, and then I could decide if I wanted to let it go. So yeah, I played for 8 years straight, and it was definitely my favorite thing.
Wow. Wow. What's your favorite type of music to play?
I love playing classical music, and I've always played classical piano. Mm-hmm. But these days, I would say I play only worship because I'm playing mostly my own songs. I wish I could still keep it up, but I don't as much as, you know, might be nice. But yeah, I love playing. All my songs are pretty piano based.
Okay.
With the worship. So I'm still playing.
That's awesome. I love that. Now, how did your love for music continue to grow throughout adulthood? Because I'll tell you, that image of you in those music boxes is beautiful. So how did your love continue through adulthood?
Yeah, it was funny. I always felt like I couldn't get enough. So I played so many different instruments, you know, starting in junior high and high school. I was like taking drum lessons and bass guitar lessons and guitar lessons. And then I got to high school and I was in all the choirs. I was in all the musicals, singing. And then I was in the orchestra playing percussion. And then I was in the jazz band playing marimba. And it's like, I was just always involved so much so that I didn't really get any kind of sense of the other arts, you know, your liberal, like I just had only music all the time, but I loved it. I could not get enough. And then into college, I kind of had my first composition lesson. It was where you actually wrote. I had written songs actually from a really young age. I started around seven. So kind of right after I started taking piano lessons. But that was my first experience in college of kind of putting a piece together, something longer. Yeah. I didn't even know that there were living composers until college. You know, I thought it was like Mozart, Beethoven. Sure. That's a long time ago. I had no idea there were people still doing that. So I ended up following that path, and I went to school later for just composition, and I studied orchestral composition on the East Coast. And yeah, so it kind of like bloomed from this little thing, just me in my room and then just me and my piano, into all these other instruments, and then finally composing for full orchestras. And I just still love it to this day. I feel like I could live a million lifetimes and not get enough because there's so much amazing music out there.
Wow. Is there an instrument in addition to piano that just really, when you're writing a part for this instrument, that you're just over the moon, just excited? And if so, like, what would that be?
For me, it's strings. So, and I got to record with a, you know, full live string orchestra for my first album, my worship album that just came out. And there's nothing like it. There's just nothing like the sound of a room full of people, like 40 string players together. And these days they have, you know, we have computer software that can kind of emulate string sounds, but it's not the same. It will never be the same. Okay. So there was actually an orchestra in Budapest that I worked with, and we did it all remotely. So it was so amazing. I worked, the conductor spoke English. Okay. And so I would be remote with him, and then he would be conducting the orchestra. And then every take they did, I would give my comments in English, and then he would translate to the orchestra. Oh, and it was amazing. Yeah.
Wow. And then there's just the different textures there are of the string instruments. There's so many different things. That's beautiful. I love it so much. I love it so much. So, okay. So this was your life. This is what you loved, all things music and composing, and to the point where you said like the other parts of the liberal arts, I really didn't pay attention to.
No.
So this was everything that you wanted to do. So when did that come to a halt, and when did that dream shift for you or almost die?
Yeah, die. I would say I was running full throttle towards music my whole life. I was always convinced I would be in music, and I wanted to be an artist at first. And then in college, my dad was like, kind of, you need to be practical. You know, how are you going to make a living? So my idea of being practical was, I'll be a producer. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's just as hard to do as being an artist. But at the time, I didn't know it. So I studied a lot of studio recording and things like that. And I remember then just kind of feeling like, no, I need to make my own music. It's just this kind of compulsion, but it's like breathing for me. It wasn't, I like writing music. It was like, this is who I am and what I do. And so I remember I decided to go back to school for writing. And that's when I went for composition on the East Coast. And then after that, I decided to move to LA, and I wanted to kind of get back to my roots of songwriting. And I loved the orchestral composition, but sometimes for me, it was a little too out there, like intellectual. I'd be 4 or 5 months sitting in front of a computer writing an orchestral score, mm-hmm. and then it get played once.
Sure.
Like, I'm not really like living and breathing music as much. So with writing and singing, you know, it's different. So mm-hmm. I went back to songwriting, and I moved to LA full of excitement about, you know, what my life would be there and showing people my music. And to be honest, I had had such a positive response to my music when I was in school and in classical school, that it didn't occur to me that, you know, people just may not like it, what I was doing when I got to LA. So I had no pulse on the music industry and what was popular, because I'd been really in the classical world. So when I got to LA, I recorded some songs and met up with some producers and vocal coaches and just different people. And the response I got was kind of just like, huh, you know, nobody said anything like bad per se for a while. It was just not getting any response. And I realized this is not going well, you know? And then one time someone actually said to me, it was someone quite big in the industry. They go, you know, this is not what people want to hear here. They want to hear dancing all night at the club, partying all night at the club, drinking all night at the club, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, he basically said to me, listen to the radio, to what songs are about. That's what people want to hear. And your stuff is too deep. It's like too spiritual. It's meaning of life stuff. No one wants to hear that. Mm. And I remember being like, whoa. I mean, that was very sobering to me. Yeah. Because I wasn't a Christian at the time. I had been raised Catholic, and then I became more spiritual. But I was very much a believer in God. Now I look back and I'm like, okay, it was my idea of God. And it was definitely, you know, not what I hold now, but I was bent towards that and deeper.
Sure.
So to have someone tell me it needs to be about drinking and partying all night at the club, I'm like, this is not me. And I tried a couple of gigs in LA, and I was like throwing up the next day, and just, it was such a bad fit, you know, being in a nightclub. And again, it's maybe a good fit for some people, but for me, it was just kind of soul crushing. And so this went on for a while until finally it occurred to me that despite all my training, despite how much I loved it, despite being passionate about it and honestly being pretty good at it, it didn't matter. It just didn't matter. It was like nobody wanted it. And there wasn't a place for it in the music industry. And what was odd is that at the same time, I was vocal coaching on the side, but I had started working with one of the top vocal coaches in LA when I got there. And then he asked me if I want to start coaching alongside him. Mm-hmm. So it was a side job, but it was a very high profile side job. I was working with all these celebrities and top TV shows and things like that. And so I was really kind of seeing behind the curtain in the industry. And I had all kinds of major label artists as clients. And I was seeing that it was real, that there was not a place for the kind of music I was making. And at that point, I didn't know of anywhere else to go or anything else to do. So I just went into a deep depression and I stopped writing. I stopped playing. I stopped singing. You know, there was no music making. And I would say at that point, I remember my mom even saying, honey, is there anything else you can do? Because she saw how I had no will to live, really. I wasn't going to go commit suicide. But I felt that like all my dreams, my sense of purpose, everything I'd ever gone toward was gone. So it was like, what am I even here to do? So that's what I lived with for quite a while. And I got terribly sick, which I know was connected, but you know, I was just getting horrible migraines and like, it was just awful. And this went on for really quite a while. And then at the same time though, my coaching career was going fantastic because I'd started with that top coach and I don't think people knew it was just internal that, you know, that that had died for me. So here I am so involved in music, but it's really just mentoring and training other people. As they live their dreams and I'm sitting there knowing that mine's gone. So it was rough.
So what happened then? I mean, what was the next step to bring you out of that pit?
Yeah, so I was still in it, but then eventually I kind of acclimated to my new life of not making music and kind of just went on. And I was attending this spiritual center in LA, which was very positive and very love and light. And, you know, I gained some comfort through that and, you know, just focusing on other things in life. And I mentored a lot of young girls through my vocal coaching. And so that was rewarding. And interestingly enough, it was also really disturbing because I was seeing so much of the lyrical content of songs that they were bringing to me and just floored. And again, I'm not a Christian at this point and I'm still floored by how really it's like encouraging people to be self-destructive, whether it's through drugs or greed or vanity or sexual immorality, but like crazy, everything is so amplified. You know, there's, we didn't seem to have just love songs anymore. And I just really felt for that generation that doesn't know any different. And I would see them so empty coming into lessons and so depressed. And And it's social media too, but it's a lot of the messaging that just comes out of Hollywood. So I would say there I was kind of cruising in that coaching career, but also disturbed by what I was seeing. And that's when a couple different family members became born again Christians. So it was first one of my brothers, he had a liver transplant and he was very close to death before that. And he just knew, like he knew, that God gave him new life. So he became a very passionate born-again Christian and we were all like, oh, that's so great, you know, for you, but didn't feel like it was something for me. And so he was talking about God all the time, reading the Bible all the time, and I just thought, oh, that's great. And then about a year after that, another brother becomes a passionate, on fire born-again Christian. It's like the only thing he's doing is reading the Bible and talking about it now. And again, I'm like, that's so great for you, you know, but I didn't want to hear about it. I was very comfortable in my spiritual beliefs and I had read so many books and I never would have called myself New Age, but because that's just kind of a derogatory term, but I did, you know, think, oh, I'm spiritual, but not religious. I'm not like closed-minded like Christians, you know, where there'd be this Jesus is the only way to God. It's like, no, there are lots of ways to God. Jesus is a great spiritual teacher, an enlightened being, you know, but I was in that kind of world. And I remember that second brother, he came to me once and he does not mince words at all. And he goes, the spiritual center you're attending is, I checked out their website and it's a satanic counterfeit. It's that it's very, very, very off. And I'm like, what? And I had never read the Bible. So even growing up Catholic, I was in Catholic school. So I knew who Jesus was, but I didn't have the idea of a personal relationship, and I hadn't ever read scripture.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that what he was saying to me does line up with scripture. It's like, right. There will be counterfeits. There will be false teachings. Mm-hmm. I just felt like he was attacking me.
Sure.
And when someone says to you that you're attending a satanic cult center or something, you know, it sounded to me like he needed to be committed to a mental institution. I was like, we talk about love and light. You know, it's like he was saying to me, you're doing rituals in a basement or something. You know, like, we don't do anything like that. So I didn't get it at all. Mm. And it ended up really having a destructive impact on our family life. Mm. So he and I didn't speak for a year after that. Mm. And then my other brother, the other born again Christian, we weren't talking either. And I didn't understand anything except for that I felt like I was being attacked. Like they were saying, you're doing evil things. And I wasn't doing anything that in my mind was evil.
Right.
You know, I thought that I was like murdering people and stealing. And, you know, I just did not understand why they suddenly were against me, because before they were Christian, they had no problem with anything I was doing. So that became a huge just experience for my whole family, this division that started occurring when we had two born again Christians in the family. And so even my mom, it was really impacting her, and they were talking to all of us about Jesus as the only way, and about scripture. And so I remember my mom starting to talk to me about Jesus too. And I had already like essentially lost two family members, and she and I were really close. So I was like, Mom, if you keep talking to me about this and shoving it down my throat, this is going to damage our relationship too. And I just, it was awful. It was just awful. And so she essentially backed off and said, okay, well, why don't you just pray to see truth?
Ooh.
And that was like really interesting to me, because no pressure.
Yeah.
And so I said, okay, I can do that. And I really had a lot of grief about the division in our family, but I was also very self-righteous and convinced that I was right. So, but I did say, okay, I can pray to see truth, because if there's any way I'm wrong, I mean, yeah, I'd like to know that. I'm not trying to be deceived. So I didn't even know who to pray to, because they're talking to me about this Christian God, you know, that's more the God of my childhood, like a personal father God. And to me, that made no sense whatsoever. And I say that because there are a lot of people who are now believing what I believed, which is that God is more of a universal force of love and light. And so the idea of like it just made no sense to me, so much so that I recognized I seemed to be repulsed by Christianity.
Wow.
It was like, not just, oh, that's not for me. It was kind of like, that stuff is old, you know, enlightened people don't believe that anymore. And I realized that a lot of what I've been taught, in what I thought was such an open-minded, spiritual, but not religious world, was actually very anti-Christian. And it's like almost friendly to everything except the idea that Jesus is the only way to God. So I was just wrestling, and I ended up going, well, I do believe I have a creator. So I'm going to pray to my creator. And that's where I started praying to see truth.
Wow.
And what was just mind-blowing for me was the idea of Jesus and God being this personal thing. It was so far-fetched for me, yet my prayers started being answered in ways that I could not deny. And they had nothing to do with my family. Like, I was such a stubborn person, hopefully I'm not anymore, but I was such a stubborn person that nothing my family said could have ever convinced me.
Sure.
But when I started praying to see truth, God started working in my life. He knew where my, you know, holdups were with Christianity. He knew where I had issues.
Wow.
And he started addressing them. And I mean, it was things like, I picked up a book that I thought was about the medical establishment. It was by a doctor. And it was called Rising from the Dead. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, this book is about how she had talked a little bit about going to medical school all fresh-eyed and wanting to help people, and then learning so much about drugs, and that it really just kind of turned towards something she didn't expect or think was good. So I was like really on board to read that. I get halfway through the book, and then she starts talking about her spiritual life and how she was more new agey, and that she had this spiritual teacher, and that she encounters a born again Christian who's actually a specialist in polio, and they start dialoguing. And the new agey woman who wrote the book, I realize her thinking is just like mine.
Okay.
And then the born again Christian, they start corresponding via email. And the new ager is asking all her questions about Christianity, all the things she thinks is wrong with it. Mm-hmm. And the Christian's answering from scripture, all of these long, well thought out, compassionate, amazingly intelligent answers. So I end up reading an entire testimony of this woman coming to faith from new age to Christianity when I was just trying to read about medicine. It's like, that's the kind of thing that started happening over and over. It's like God wow. knew right where I was. He met me there and started pulling me toward him. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I'll say in that regard is that prayer to see truth, he also, it felt like he like parted a veil.
Wow.
And started to show me evil.
I love that.
And I think that's not everybody's journey. But for me, I had this idea that the world was good, that people were basically good, that I was basically good, that mm-hmm. God was good, that everything was good and love and light. And honestly, that's very popular in the right. you know, spiritual world I was part of. It's like training your mind to focus on positive things. And so God needed to show me that wasn't true, because if everything's good already, there's no need for a savior. You know, you can just read self-help books and be good to go.
Yeah.
So a lot of my journey was God kind of peeling back that veil and showing me evil a lot in the industry I was working in. Because as I said, I was destroyed before I became a Christian. But he started showing me, you know, if people listened to these songs and went and did what they're telling them to do,
right?
Where would that lead?
Yeah.
And every single message I could point out in these songs was leading really clearly towards death and self-destruction. And then it was like, oh, that's not an accident. How could that be an accident if 95% of the songs are about that? Mm-hmm. And he just started to show me that there is a devil. Mm-hmm. There he is stealing and killing and lying. And that, you know, my very spiritual foundation was built on something that really sounded great, but it simply wasn't true.
Yeah. You're this part of your story, Kira, it makes me think, I think it's in Romans where Paul is talking about to those who are perishing, the message of the gospel, it doesn't even make sense. There's no ability to understand. And so when you talked about a veil being taken off of your eyes to really see how things are, and it's not, listeners, please hear me. I'm not saying don't talk to your friends or your family members that don't know Jesus, but I love what your mom challenged you to do of just pray to find truth. And I think that both individual seeking and those of us that are trying to share the gospel with others, that should be our guiding prayer. God, help me to speak your truth and help them to hear your truth, because the Holy Spirit of God can speak to that, the inner can get to where our words can't get. Yes. And so I'm over here going like, your mom was a genius. Your mom, I think, was surrendering to the leading of the Lord to say that to you of, then it's on you, if you will, I have air quotes, to follow whatever you hear. And God is so good, because his word says, if you seek me, you will find me. I love to say that he's bad at hide and seek.
Right.
Right? Like as soon as you're like, okay, he's like, I'm here.
Yeah. And I have to say for the listeners, I felt so stupid praying to this, you know, because I would start to pray, I would go, okay, Jesus, will you show me who you are? But at the same time, I didn't believe in Jesus. So it just like, I felt so dumb. But it was like, that's where there's just the beginning of some faith. Like, I'm going to go outside what I understand.
Yeah.
Because, and I would say that as an adult, it's kind of hard. Like I had a very developed theology, even though I didn't know it at the time. I thought I was all open-minded, but really, you know, I had my ways of thinking, and God had to get through that.
Yeah.
And he's genius. He created us, and he knows, you know, deeper than we do what's going on inside us. So he can really meet us where we are. And he did that.
I love how the book that you read, I mean, he knows how he created you, how he created your heart and your mind. And he knew what you needed to hear and read to be able to understand and know.
Yes.
I love that God uses unusual things to bring us to him because he knows how he created his daughters. I love that. I just love that. That's so good. That is so good. Okay, we're going to switch gears for a second. You and your husband, Nick, you guys recently had a marriage ceremony in Austin, Texas. And so we want all of the details, please. How in the world did you meet? Tell us all of this.
Yeah, so that is a radical story in itself. So I was making worship. I was living here in San Diego, and I'll have to circle back to that because I just realized I didn't answer how I got. God totally rebirthed every musical thing in my life. After I became a born again Christian, after my whole belief system had to die, after my dream had died, when I came to him and I said, show me how to use the gifts that you've given me for your kingdom.
I love that so much.
He started giving me worship song after worship song. And after that huge period of barrenness where I had given up music, he literally said, this is why I made you. I made you to worship me. And it was mind blowing. It's like, oh, that's why he gave me musical gifts. That's why I went and pursued them. That's why I had all this training. That's why I love to sing and I love to play, but I could never find the right fit because none of that was why he made me. And so, he totally answered my prayer. I now know with 100% certainty, like, okay, this is why you made me. I'm just going to walk in that. So here I was living in San Diego. I was leading worship nights at my house and I was making my album, my first worship album. And I was on this, I was at a conference with some people from my church and it was an Alpha conference.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the evangelism.
We love Alpha.
Alpha. Alpha was part of my journey. So when I was praying to see truth during that year, I did start reading the Bible to kind of see like, what is this about? What does this mean?
Sure.
And then I started, I got a recommendation for a local church and it was an amazing church called Vintage in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
And they were advertising Alpha and it said, do you have questions? And I was like, yes, I have questions. So I came, not believing. And I did the whole, I think I did it almost two sessions and it was amazing. So then after I became a Christian, fast forward a couple of years, it's like, I want to learn how to run Alpha. So I went with some people from my church because I knew it had such an impact on me and I was such a skeptic. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, oh my gosh, if that could help me, that could help anybody. So here I am at this church conference and there were four or five of us going and I only knew one of the guys. And so two girls were coming from San Diego also. And we get to the conference. One of the girls is there the first night and she and I are chit-chatting. And then she just stops and looks at me and she says, are you single? Because someone's popping in my head for you right now. And then I had never heard anyone say that to me. So I go, who? And then the weirdest thing happened. She suddenly looked confused and changed the subject. So, okay, that was weird. I don't even know this girl, so I'll just let it go. So then the next day, the second girl from our group flies in. I also didn't know her. So I'm having lunch with her and just kind of getting to know her and chatting. And then she says, are you single? Because someone's popping in my head for you right now.
What?
And I go, well, who? And she says, Nick Miller, he's super good friends with my husband. He's an amazing guy. Would you be interested in meeting him? And I go, only if he's really on fire, because I knew I was just like this on fire. Not a lot of people would want that if they if they weren't. And she goes, oh, he is. He is. And so I go, okay. I mean, I guess I'd be interested in meeting him. And so she showed me his Instagram. He's really cute. And I go, okay. And so then later that night, all of us from the conference are in the car together. And that girl who had told me his name, she said, I was talking to Kira and Mick Miller's face just popped into my head. And then the other girl screamed, the girl from the previous night. Yeah. She goes, oh my God, I was talking to her last night. His face popped in my mind for her, but I thought he was seeing somebody. So I didn't want to tell her. So it's like God gave it to one person and then they didn't say it. And he gave it to another girl next day. And I'm still a fairly new Christian, maybe, 2 years in. So I hadn't seen anything like this, where they both felt like they got clear pictures from the Lord. Like, this is the guy for her. And so I wasn't asking for a guy. You know what I mean? I was at an evangelism conference, but I had been praying. I had been praying in my room by myself, like, God, I would love to be married, but I want you to choose the man, not me. And I had been praying, I had been asking God to be my matchmaker. It's just astounding to me. I would say the most astounding thing about my journey is, and the astounding thing about God, there's so many, right? But that you're alone praying in your room, nobody's around, and he hears exactly what you're saying.
Yes.
And he answers it. I mean, that's how I came to faith, because there was no explanation.
Wow.
For the questions I was asking and the prayers I was praying and then the answers I was getting from all kinds of different sources.
Yeah.
It's like there was no other explanation than he's hearing me and he's answering me. And that's what happened with my marriage. So they ended up getting in touch with him, and it took him 3 months to call me. My husband is a man of prayer, and he was praying about whether he should call me, and he wanted a clear yes from God. And this is really funny, but he didn't tell me this until after we really connected.
Yeah.
That he had called them, the girls who had said they saw my face. They did not, to their credit, they didn't tell him that. They just said, oh, we met a girl who's really on fire. We think she's very similar to you. You know, it would be cool if you guys met. They did not say, we got a picture from the Lord, because they knew that's against the rules. So they just kind of said, hey, she's really cool. At the very least, you guys could be good friends.
Yeah.
So apparently he says, well, what's she like in church? How does she interact with people? How does she serve? What's her walk with God? How long has she been a Christian? All this stuff.
Wow.
And they go, well, we just met her. and then he goes, well, who really knows her?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, Ryan, the pastor of our church. And so he picked up the phone and called Ryan and talked for a really long time. This is before he would even invite me to coffee.
Wow.
Because he told me, he's like, I have no interest in just taking girls out, even if they're nice. And he was like really vetting me with my pastor to make sure that my walk with God was authentic. And he was very concerned that I was a new Christian. Apparently my pastor said, you have no worries. Like, she's so on fire.
Yeah.
And he was very sweet. My pastor literally told me later, he said, it was one of the most joyful experiences I've ever had as a pastor.
Wow.
And so he was just overjoyed when we got married. But I'll tell you this, this is crazy. We met and we were married 30 days later. We literally got married 30 days later. It was the clearest supernatural experience. Cause I was an adult. I had dated, many times throughout my life. God did this. It was so clear. I was like, it's like he dropped down from heaven and God showed me what relationship is supposed to be. And I really saw this path I have. That was when I did it.
Sure.
This is when God does it. And we just got a peace that was unreal. And my husband was very bold. He's like, the Lord's telling me this. And I was like, he's telling me the same thing.
Wow.
And so I just felt like I met my husband. Mm-hmm. So we didn't date. We didn't do a long engagement. We called our families. They met and everything. Yeah. But so this wedding celebration we just did, that was over a year after we'd been married, but mm-hmm. we didn't get to do a wedding because of COVID.
Right. And
we had a courthouse, you know, we made a covenant before the Lord first, and we went to a courthouse. And, you know, at that time it was so locked down, they didn't even have witnesses. You had to pay the court for a witness.
Oh, wow.
So this was just an amazing full circle for us to get to celebrate with our friends and family, to celebrate what God did in our lives.
Yeah. What I love so much that is just coming from your story is before you even came to faith, it started with you talking to God. Mm-hmm. And then as you came to faith, you've just continued in the communion and having conversations with God over what am I going to do? What am I going to pursue? And to hear from him of this is what I made you to do. How good is God to give you back the very thing that you thought you would never do again because there wasn't a space for it?
And I actually thought the relationship thing was dead too, because I mean, I was single. Mm-hmm. I hadn't had any success like finding that either. So when I say God redeemed everything in my life, he did. It's like, I mean, there's no way to put into words the goodness of God. And I was not a perfect person. Like I said, I was so self-righteous, so stubborn, and so wrong mm-hmm. about who he was. And I was selfish. You know, I didn't see it at the time. But looking back, I go, my whole life was centered on me and, you know, self-improvement, self-realization, living out my dream, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. It's like, God totally took my focus, which was here, and turned it. And I realized he changed me. I never could change myself.
Yeah.
He changed me. I never could get the things that I, you know, wanted in life until I went to him and said, what do you want for my life? You're the one who made me.
Yeah.
And then the answers that come from that place are just good beyond our wildest imaginings.
I love that so much. And we say that a lot because I want our listeners to hear that this wasn't an overnight story. This wasn't like some trick you snapped your fingers, because that's not how a relationship with God works. But you asked genuine and authentic questions and you gave yourself the space to hear the answers. And God used books, and I'm sure he used other people, and I'm sure there are circumstances that he just was weak. Here we go. You ready for this? I think you're going to like this, Kira. Like a master conductor.
Totally.
Love it.
Orchestrating your life and orchestrating your walk and your path to him, to relationship with him, not to religion, not to rules, not to legalism, but to him. And he in turn was able to tell you all that he had planned for you. Give reason why this is why you are who you are. So the part of your story, meeting your husband, I'm like, that sounds like our God. That sounds like what he would do for someone who would trust him, for someone who would say, you know, I don't know why this isn't here, but I trust you and I'm going to serve you. And I love that you said that you weren't looking, not that that's the key or that's the magic. Listeners, hear me. But I do think that the key of what you said is that you just kept talking to the Lord.
I did.
Serving him.
And I remember I said, you know, God, if your will is for me to be single, mm-hmm. even in that, mm-hmm. though marriage was the biggest desire of my heart at that point, because I already had the music again.
Yeah.
So it was like marriage was this other thing I really wanted. But then I knew, just like with the music, you know better than I do. I trust you. And mm-hmm. so it was that kind of surrender when I finally got to that place. It was like, whatever your will is, God, you know my mm-hmm. heart's desire is to be married, but you know best and I will trust you in it. And that got me to a place of really being able to wait on him.
Sure.
So people talk about waiting on the Lord. And I don't think I ever really knew what that was until I was praying over my marriage. And then I just was like, what an amazing thing that I'm waiting on the mm-hmm. Lord, that he hears me, that I know he heard me, mm-hmm. and that he's going to do whatever the best thing is. And so it was a beautiful time, honestly, of going, I know he heard me because he's heard me every other time. And so I'm not going to go try and make something happen. And that's what I mean when I said I wasn't looking, I wasn't on dating sites. I wasn't. And I remember saying to so many people, because I was older, because I was so on fire, I remember saying it would be an act of God for me to find a husband at this point, because I thought all on fire Christian men had 4 kids and were married. Yeah. I just thought there was no prayer of finding somebody. So I just said, it would be an act of God. It would be a miracle for me to find someone, but I believe in miracles.
Yeah.
And he gave me one.
Yeah. I love that. Well, and I'll tell you, I like what you just said. I know he heard me because he showed me, he's heard me all the other times. Mm-hmm. And, so many times, if someone says to me, I just don't know if he's listening. I don't know if, I can trust him with this. I don't know if he's going to move on my behalf. So many times I say, look to the past, mm-hmm. because he has proven himself faithful.
Right.
And he has walked you through those things before, and he will walk you through those things again. Or he's walked you through something before, and he's going to walk you through something new now. But I think so many times we forget, it's like we have amnesia, that we forget that what he's done for us has proven that he's still going to do something for us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that, I think, oh, that's a good word. That's a good word that you just gave there. Cause I think some listener right now needs to know that is sitting there questioning, is God going to show up for me?
Right.
He has shown up for you, and he's going to show up for you again. Right. It just may look different. It just may look different. Kira, we ask all of our guests, the final same question, that if you were able to leave us with just one idea or one statement today, what would it be?
I think it would be that God knows better than we know in every area of our lives.
I love
that. And that he's so good that when we surrender each area of our life to him,
that's right,
it'll be better than anything we could have ever dreamed up.
That's right.
And that's what I've just found over and over and over. I am still blown away by the goodness of God. I would have Christian friends, I'd hear them say, God is good. God is good all the time. And I'd kind of be like, oh, that's some weird Christian thing. Then now I'm that person like, oh my, God is so good. Like a father who loves you so much and knows, you know, even better than we do.
Yeah.
Wow.
What's best for us. And so, yeah, it's just trusting him in all things.
I love that.
That's so good. Kira, I love this. And if our listeners are listening to you, like, okay, we've talked about music, we've talked about her story, we've talked about all these different things, where can they find your music?
Yes.
Oh, I would love that. Okay. So it's available. My album is called Refuge.
Okay.
And it's available on every streaming platform. So awesome. Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon, that kind of thing, and YouTube. So all of my stuff, if you just search Kira Fontana in any of those places, you'll find it. Or my website is kirafontana.net. And then if anyone is interested, I also mentor Christian artists now. So I work with worship artists, and I also still do the high level vocal coaching that I did in Hollywood, but I do focus on training Christian artists now.
Sure.
So I'll be doing that in Austin too. And my website, my company for that is Kingdom Sound.
I love that.
And it's kingdomsound.net. So both of my websites are .net, kirafontana.net or kingdomsound.net.
That's awesome. That's so great. Kira, thank you. Thank you. I mean, you really have been a gift today. Just a reminder of God's faithfulness. And not only a reminder in God's faithfulness, but a reminder that he stops at nothing to pursue.
Right.
Yes. He pursued the mess out of you. And I just,
it's like he just needed a little crack for me to just like pray and just open a little bit.
I mean, he will not stop. And I love it. I just love it. And what I hope people hear is that's how much he loves each of us. He's going to love each of us that much. He's going to have plans for each of us in a unique way. And Kira, your story is a gift. And Portia and I believe that stories change lives because we believe that somebody that's listening today is going to believe that God will show up for them just like he showed up for you, just like he showed up for you. So thank you.
Will.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a joy.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, listeners, we love you and we want you to share this episode and we know that you're encouraged. And you know what we'd really love is if you let us know how Kira's story encouraged you. Reach out to us on our socials or you can email us because we know that stories change lives and we'd love to hear how yours was changed. So we love you and until next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.